we were considering the aspects of psychological non-attachment as the first effort that one has to make while living in seclusion for the purpose of the practice of yoga. This is almost 50% of what one has to do in fortifying oneself adequately against onslaughts by forces of nature outside as well as inside. The vulnerable parts of the human personality are the most dangerous enemies in the path of the spirit, which set up reactions and stimulate their counterparts in the world outside. Everything in us is connected by a string with everything else in the world. All that is outside in the world of creation is connected with us by subtle appurtenances. So, whichever be the spot within us getting predominant in its strength, that particular spot stimulates its corresponding part in the world outside and draws its counterpart towards itself. This activity of the mind is called indulgence, which it does through the senses, which are its instruments of action. Many a time we are likely to be under the impression that our troubles come from the outside world, and so we go to distant places, to jungles, forests and cloisters. And there are occasions when we feel that the troubles do not always come from the world outside, they are all inside us only. So it is necessary that we do a very thoroughgoing psychoanalysis of our own selves, irrespective of what is happening in the world outside. Both these are partial truths and do not represent the entire truth. It is true, of course, to a certain extent, that all our troubles are not necessarily originated by the world outside. Many of our problems are internal, and a proper adjustment of ourselves internally may solve many of our difficulties. But the world is also a source of trouble in the sense that it is connected with us, and we cannot simply isolate it from our personalities or our individual lives. So is the case with ourselves. We cannot say from where the trouble arises, whether it is from inside us or from outside us, because the trouble arises simultaneously from both sides. Inasmuch as both the internal center and the external counterpart of it are connected by subtle artifices of which we cannot have knowledge easily. So again, we come to the conclusion that there is something tremendously difficult about the practice of yoga. We cannot be one-sided in our approaches at any time. But we are prone to one-sided approach always. It is difficult for the human mind to consider both sides of an issue due to a weakness of its nature itself. Either we hang on something outside or we hibernate ourselves in our own minds. This happens to us not only in our daily activities but also in our religious attitudes. We are either too extrovert or we are too introvert. But neither of these natures can be regarded as desirable ultimately or successful. We have to take a comprehensive view and take a joint action, as it were, from within as well as without. While it is necessary for us to find out what are our weaknesses, we have also to recognize at the same time what are the things around us which may be in a position to stimulate these weaknesses into activity. We have to subdue our passions and inordinate urges within, not only by an inward analysis, philosophical contemplation, company of the wise saints and sages, etc., but also be physically away from those counterparts of these inner urges which can stimulate us into activity in spite of our satsangas, studies, japas, meditations, etc. So there is a necessity to perform a double action at the same time. Inwardly be wary, cautious, vigilant, self-introspective, and pure to the extent possible. But outwardly be also guarded. So, seclusion is one aspect of the matter. And self-analysis is its other side. This process has to continue every day. As our great guide Patanjali puts it, success is quick in the case of those seekers who are persistent in their practice. And do not break the practice by discontinuing it even for a day. And keep up the intensity of the practice in the same manner as they entertained it in their hearts at the commencement of a fit of renunciation and love for God in their lives. But all this is easily said, but very difficult to practice. Because while we may be wise, the forces of the world also equally wise are capable of circumventing every one of our precautions. And sometimes harnessing the very means of our protection as instruments of their action. The very caution that we have taken may become an instrument of our indulgence and fall. In other words, our friends themselves may turn against us as enemies. The conducive atmosphere that we are thinking of in our mind may become an obstructing atmosphere. You have only to study the personal lives of sincere seekers who live in far off places, away from towns and cities. Their thoughts, feelings and emotions are to be studied. You will find that it is a very complicated tale, not always a happy one to hear, and there should be no wonder if after years of practice any tangible result has not followed. Our desires have various stages and forms of manifestation, and they are very wise, like snakes. They know how to act when the time for action comes. They know how to withdraw themselves when it is time for them to withdraw themselves. Prasupta, Tanu, Vichinna, Udara are supposed to be the four conditions of desire. If circumstances are unfavorable, the desires will be sleepy. Suppose you are in Gangotri or Uttarakashi with no cloth, no woolen blankets, no financial resources and nothing to set you into action in the direction of fulfilling your wishes, you would be undergoing a kind of compulsive austerity. And for a time, it will look that you are on the spiritual path, practicing penance for the sake of God realization. But beware. The desires are sleeping. A sleeping person is not a dead person. So when there is a latency of the desires in Gangotri, etc., it does not mean that they are destroyed, because they are lying in ambush to catch you at the earliest opportunity that may be provided to them. Desires which are sleeping may become causes of mental ill health. There can be a manifestation of peculiar complexes of behavior in that person, susceptibility to sudden rage or anger at the least provocation, and desire for silly things which a normal person would regard as meaningless. A desire for a pencil. You can imagine what a desire it is. You will think it is a foolish person. He is desiring a pencil. But a person whose desires have slept for years and could not reveal themselves even a little due to unfavorable conditions would find a tremendous joy even if you present a pencil to that person. A fountain pen, of course, is heaven. Why? Because the desires have been starved. They are hungry like lions, ready to devour anything that comes near them. A hungry lion is a dangerous animal. Though it is unable even to get up because you have starved it for days. And therefore it is essential that we should not play jokes with God or the system of yoga by merely running into icy regions, taking bath in broken ice and not seeing face of human beings. This may continue for years, but that is not the whole story. There is something more about it. Prasupta condition is sleeping condition of a desire. And you cannot know that the desires are sleeping except by the complexes that you manifest in your lives. And unless a person is a good psychologist, one cannot know what these complexes are, because they would look normal behavior for one's own self. They would be unnatural behaviors in the eyes of a very shrewd observer. A normal person in the worldly sense even. But for one's own self, it may look very healthy behavior. You will find that irascibility is one of the features you will find in people who have subdued their desires by force for a long time. They get immediately angry for even the smallest thing and make wry faces and retort in a manner in which even a person in the world would not indulge. Sometimes the desires become thin. They are not sleeping, they are awake. But they are thin like a fine silken thread. As for example, when you descend from Gangotri to Rishikesh but stay in ashram, it is slowly awakening itself. Oh, I have come to Rishikesh. This atmosphere is more congenial than Gangotri. But it cannot be fulfilled because I am in ashram. So, like a weakened snake which has been starved for many days, slowly it is trying to move, wriggle out of its soul, finding opportunity to fulfill itself but cannot. Due to the restrictions of the atmosphere in which one lives. When you voluntarily fast on Ekadashi, for example, not by compulsion from others. The desire is, the desire for food is thin. It is not destroyed because you have a satisfaction that tomorrow you are going to get a good meal. That satisfaction that you are going to get a good meal tomorrow is itself a strength to bear the pain of today's fast. Otherwise, if you are not sure that you may not get food for even 10 days, you don't know what will happen for days together, then it will be horror. Very difficult is this mind to understand. You may have no money in your hand just now, but you will have a satisfaction that you have plenty in your bank. So, money need not necessarily be in the hand always. It can be even in a bank thousands of miles away from here, but a mere feeling that it is yours or it is there can give you a very healthy satisfaction. On the other hand, I will throw millions of dollars on your lap, which belongs to the government. You cannot have be happy. Even if you are lying on dollar currency notes, which do not really belong to you and you cannot touch. You may be a cashier in a bank, what is use? Counting for nothing, it is not yours. You will be cursing yourself, even if you are touching millions of rupees or dollars. On the other hand, you are happy even if nothing is in your hand, merely because of the feeling that it is yours. Thousands of miles away. Subtle is the behavior of the mind. The mind can therefore satisfy itself by various means. And your attempt at a sublimation of desires would not be always fruitful. Because who is to control or subjugate the mind? There is no doctor for it. It is the mind itself that has to rectify itself by an internal adjustment of its constitution. The mind is the patient and mind is the doctor. This is something difficult to conceive. How can the doctor and the patient be same? But this is the situation. There is a peculiar feature in the mind which can act as a regulator. For another feature of the very same mind, which is to be regulated. Sometimes we call it the higher mind controlling the lower mind, etc., in common language. Thinness of desire is an occasional device which the mind may adopt for the sake of making it appear that the desires are not there. While this subtle connection in the form of that thinned form of desire, thin shape of desire, can swell it into inflated action. The moment opportunities arise, suitable conditions are provided. At other times, desires are intermittent. They come and they go. This is called vichinna avastha. While the thinned form is called tanu avastha. Today you are angry, tomorrow you are very pleasant in mood. You have seen husband and wife quarreling in families. They will not talk to each other. But they are not hating each other really. Even if one puts on the appearance of disagreement, anger, and a mood of rejection, as it happens in members, among members in the family, it does not mean that they hate one another. They have got a tremendous tie of attachment, which can manifest itself at other times under different conditions. It is a subtlety of love which gets suppressed by a fit of displeasure, at which moment it may look that the desire has gone, the love is absent, but it is pushed underneath. It is not absent. And tomorrow it will come up. It is possible that today you may be very affectionate, tomorrow you may be quite the contrary. And the day after tomorrow again you will be something else. So it is possible for a person to behave under different conditions of pressure in different ways, looking now one thing and another thing afterwards. This is the intermittent condition of human desire, which takes shapes suitable to the conditions prevailing outside. Because the purpose of the mind is to keep itself safe, secure. By hook or crook. If desire should not be manifest, it will not manifest it. If the manifestation of desire is harmful to its maintenance, to its security, it is good not to manifest it. And it will manifest only those features which are necessary for the security of itself at that moment. And at another moment, the other features will manifest themselves, whatever they be, for the purpose of its maintenance and security then. And every condition is fulfilled positively, the desire can fully manifest itself. That is called udaravastha. Then it will come like a roaring flood. and swallow you. Prasupta Tanu Vichyanna Udara. Four conditions of desire are mentioned by Patanjali. And we are always in one or the other of these conditions. It does not mean that we have controlled the desires or subjugated them or sublimated, nothing of the kind. Because the moods that you manifest in your daily life will indicate they are still there. What is to be done then? There are various methods suggested by teachers of yoga as well as scripture. One of the methods is to live in a positive atmosphere, even though there may be rumbling of desires from within. For example, in the vicinity of a guru, it is difficult for desires to manifest themselves in an unholy form in the proximity of a spiritual master. And continued living with him for years together, for instance, may make it so impossible for the desires to reveal themselves outside that they have no other alternative than to give up all hopes. Not only that, the proximity with a great sage or a spiritual master produces a positive effect of its own. It is like the light and warmth of a sun which destroys all infectious germs and purifies the whole air outside. You feel sometimes as if everything is all right in the presence of a great man. Well, when you are away from him, all things may look at sixes and sevens. But in the presence of that great man, your questions are answered. Your emotions are subdued, the desires are silent, and holy aspirations manifest themselves in his presence, as it sometimes happens inside a temple even. When you witness a grand worship in a sacred temple, you are roused into a holy emotion at that moment. You strike your cheeks, prostrate yourself before the deity, sing songs in ecstasy. For the time being, you forget everything that is earthly, carnal, physical, and undesirable. There is a spiritual emotion roused in the presence of a deity in a temple or in the presence of a spiritual master. While this is perhaps a very desirable method that can be suggested in the case of everyone? It may not be practicable for all people to be always witnessing holy worships in temples or to be in the presence of a master. They have various difficulties of their own in their personal lives. Then the alternative method suggested is take to holy study for a protracted period, as we have, for example, what they call Bhagavata Saptaha in our country, or a Purascharana of a mantra, which takes all your time. You have no time to think anything else. You keep your desires in subjugation for such a long time that they become very weak, and the positive influence exerted on them by the Purascharana or the mantra or the holy reading called the Swadhyaya may sublimate them, may liquefy them, and rarefy them to such an extent that they get either tuned to your holy aspirations or are made to vanish altogether. People who cannot always be under the direct guidance of a spiritual master would do well to take to mantra purasharana or holy study for a few hours of the day, not merely for a few minutes, so that the thoughts that are generated in the mind at that time would have the influence of a check upon undesirable emotions rising up, and purify the emotions gradually, though this process may take a very, very long time. But when there is no other alternative, this has to be done. Study of such great scriptures like the Srimad Bhagavata, the Bhagavad Gita, the Ramayana of Valmiki or Tulsidas, whatever it be, as a regular sadhana, not merely a random reading as in library, would also create internal conditions by which the grace or blessings of these holy authors of these scriptures also would descend upon the seeker. When you read the Srimad Bhagavata, you are in a subtle internal contact with the great author, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa. After all, the thoughts are inseparable from the personality who has projected these thoughts. You are in communion with Vyasa himself in some way. When you study the glorious recitations of the Mahabharata or the Srimad Bhagavata, you are in communion with the great sublime feelings of Valmiki. When you read the Sundar Kanda of the Ramayana, you are in tune with Christ's tremendous spiritual force when you read the New Testament, Sermon on the Mount, etc. When you read such holy texts like Imitations of Christ of Thomas Kempis, you are in tune with that forceful love of God which that holy author enshrined in his own heart. Study of these scriptures, therefore, is not merely a means of gathering information on spiritual matters, but a positive technique of transmuting one's emotions into those conditions of thought and life which were the of which these authors of the scriptures are embodiment. And when you do Purascharana of a mantra, a similar effect takes place. The blessing of the rishi who discovered the mantra is upon you. The grace of the devata who is the deity of that mantra is upon you. And the alchemic effect produced by the chandas of the mantra which you are reciting also is a highly contributory factor. Rishi, chandas and devata are associated with a mantra. So Swadhyaya of scriptures and Japa of mantras resorted to in a very consistent, austere manner as a sadhana would be a safeguard against possible difficulties on the spiritual path. Hari Om Tat Sat. Thank you.